Welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, aka Le Grand Papa B, and aka Gaston Lebanor. Lebanor, see me in your store. I gotta work on a better rhyme. Okay, before I start, I need to acknowledge the fact, it's important for me to acknowledge the fact that today's episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on February 12, 2025. Today's episode is still, like all the previous episodes before, is rated R and F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Okay, one more acknowledgement I'd like to make is I want to send a shout out to who I like to refer to as the heartbeat of this interaction, of this thing of ours. And that's all you listeners. So if you're a listener, give it up for yourself. Stand up and clap. Look in the mirror, stand up and clap. And a special shout out to if it's like your first time listening, you know, and you're just here on an open mind, just checking it out. And I want to shout you out. And my hope is that, who knows, maybe we make history together. Yay! Now get up and introduce yourself. That's right, to the congregation. And no swearing. All right, in today's episode, titled 240, Viens, on est arrivé, I should put that in quotations, I discuss my final impression, because this was all planned, my final impressions of the book, Ça ne marchera jamais, I should say the audiobook, Ça ne marchera jamais, the French edition of This Shit Will Never Work, actually, no, it's the, I'll translate it later. But it's the book about Netflix. I talked about it in a previous episode. I forgot which. I'm an old man. I forget shit. I forget which episode it was. But I talked about my first impression, and this is like my final impression. But I know the internet is buzzing. I will also talk about the halftime show. My impression of the halftime show. I know a lot of people I've been, you know, waiting up all night to hear what B Black has to say. Actually, I'll be talking about that first before I talk about my book impression. And I'll give you a hint. If you are someone who uses words like Kendrick Glazer, this podcast, this episode won't be for you. If you're someone who didn't like the halftime show, especially if you're salty white cracker, you are not going to like this episode. You know what? Pretend you're like Whitey. Fuck you. fuck you as a staff, freaking living as a motherfucking crew. All right, okay. So, yeah, you've been forewarned. Before we get to the featured thoughts, I'm going to call it, featured thoughts. Let's start out with some quotes. And the first quote, before I start with quotes, I need to, like, send a shout out to Ginger and Lemon Tea. Ginger and Lemon Tea. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I've developed an appreciation for tea and herbal tea. Or maybe the English have colonized my brain, but whatever, man. For those who are familiar with my podcast and every episode I complain about this room, there's some kind of allergens going around. I have an air filter. It could only do so much. Yeah, I noticed that when I'm editing. I'm like, fuck, man, you cough a lot. But then again, do I cough a lot normally? I have a doctor's appointment. We'll see how that goes. Actually, I did go to the doctor and they're like, fuck what we know. Beast the shit out of us. I mean, they sent me to an allergen. And your agent said, yeah, I know you're not making it up. I just can't tell you why the fuck you got this shit. So who knows? I'm kind of hoping people in the future will like be able to use this information to be like, oh, you got blah, 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 like this. A disease that only the black man can get. So it's certified by blackness. Anyway, okay. Okay. So shout out to Ginger and Lemon Tea. T'as un gingembre, thé avec gingembre et citron. All right. First quote. It goes, don't let anyone who hasn't been in your shoes tell you how to tie your laces. Let that shit marinate. Let it marinate. Second quote goes, for the sake of your mental health, for the sake of your mental well-being, you have to let some things pass by without reacting to them. Easier said than done. Personalizing them or absorbing them. This too is self-care, energy hygiene, and boundary work. Remember this today. Lala Dalia. But special shout out to Talal Macy for the poet Talal Macy for blessing my timelines with these quotes. Yeah. Okay. What else do I got? Okay, no, wow, only two quotes for this episode. All right, boys and girls, let's jump into some randomness before we get to, like I said, feature thoughts. First thought is, oh, you know what? This could have been a quote, should have been a quote, but it's, you know what? Oh my God. In the show notes, it's labeled as Justneek91, and her take on authenticity is a flex most people can't handle. Stay real, stay bright. And I got to tell you, man, this thing inspired me to continue to do this podcast. And here it goes.
People get uncomfortable when you like yourself more than they feel like you should. Mm. When you're not ashamed of what they think you should be ashamed of. When you live your life according to your own taste and your own interests instead of what's trending or popular. Being around authentic energy triggers a lot of people. It makes them feel less than, because the truth is so many are pretending to be someone that they're not, that they assume you're pretending too. It triggers cognitive dissonance when they realize that you're actually about that life. I'm not this way by magic. I like myself. I'm all that I got. So I don't compare myself to others, unless they're comparing themselves to me. And even then, I'm still the winner. I don't understand how regular ass people can compare themselves to other regular ass people. We are not in high school. Life is whipping us all. So if you choose to spend your life appeasing other people, that's fine. No skin off my back. But don't act like there's something wrong with me because I do my own thing. Let that be a lesson. To you, it's just who you are. You're regular. You're humble. But to others, your energy, it might be bright and powerful. That throws people off. For people who are not used to vibrating that high, you're a problem.
I was going to start out by saying, man, I'm jealous of the fact that a soul so young is this wise, and I'm defeating the purpose of that's her journey. That's her being herself. That's her blessing. Maybe the fact that she embraced who she, is what allowed her to put this content out on online. With all that said, my high school, the version of me in high school would have never understood what she said. I did not have the maturity to process. I still remember, I'll even go to my cousin who would hang out with us, and we were like, this is college years, and he didn't drink. And I was like, what the fuck's wrong with you, man? You can do whatever. And it was just, honestly, it's only now that I get it. In hindsight, he was honestly just being himself. He wasn't trying to make a point. He wasn't trying to convince us that he was better than the rest of us, but he had just mastered the art of, I'm just doing my thing. And actually, I still remember him getting in trouble, just him being, what the fuck? What do you mean you don't drink? Okay, he followed trends every once in a while, like he was a teenager, but he had moments where he was just comfortable in being himself. And I remember how that shit felt like so foreign to me. It's like, this is the trend. What do you mean? Walk this way. talk this way. And he was like, nope. So I punched him. I'm kidding. But anyway, I'm just saying, yo, this is some wisdom, man. And and I can understand being a youngin' and this shit not making sense. Or it's, yeah, I'm going to make it into a trend. Don't. Excuse me. Well, so much for that lemon and ginger tea. All right, okay. What next item? I was hanging out with a friend yesterday. I won't summarize the entire conversation, but the one major takeaway that I appreciated is I was talking about how it's like I was trying to get a solution. This probably relates to the first thought about being yourself, be your true self. But I was explaining how I have this habit of, or not habit, but it's like if I'm around someone, how I tend to absorb their energy. And if those motherfuckers are negative, I will absorb, not just absorb it, but also feel the need to mimic it. So if you're like a person bitching about everything, this actually happened with a coworker. And they were like, I remember by the end of the conversation, by the end of our interaction, I felt like splitting a vein. I felt like opening a vein. And I remember going, why the fuck are you feeling so negative? And then I remember that, oh, the previous interaction. Anyways, I was explaining this to a colleague. And I remember their answer was like, I don't know, I just don't let people get to me that way. It was powerful. I mean, it was powerful, but I was like, whatever. But it just left me thinking about two things. One is realizing, and I guess this is a frequent conversation in therapy, but it pushed me to the realization of, okay, I need to figure out what I'm doing differently. It made me realize that I have a habit of absorbing energy. It made me think about or start giving thoughts to what exactly I do that causes me to take in energy. Like, what I'm trying to say is, there's got to be a part where I'm making a choice. I need to figure those out. When I have therapy session, I remember came in. I'm saying, "Yo, homegirl, I'm starting to think you can't help me with these problems I'm having with my interaction with people. Because it's always a frequent situation. It's always a frequent, like in my mind, the best solution is just avoiding people, and because I'm in therapy, it's constantly like this happened to me. I had a negative experience with a person, and you'll be like, you know, well, you shouldn't have. Well, no, the answer is not you shouldn't have, but it's like, essentially, I'm trying to agree to, yeah, you know what, you're right. Fuck the world. Burn it all. Fuck everybody that's on my body. Anyway, yeah. I was comparing it to, I feel like therapy session is, yo, I go out there, I get my ass kicked by the bully, and your response is, go back out there. As opposed to, how about I just stay home? But I'm realizing by me saying, I don't think you can help me, what I'm really saying is, I need to start digging deeper. Because the solution isn't, hear me out, the solution isn't fear the bully, avoid the bully. The solution is, nigga, fucking break out the art of war. Find a way to defeat your enemies. Die trying or some shit like that. Like, I understand the principle of figure it out, essentially. I mean, the easy solution is just avoid the bully. But when the bully is someone you have to interact with, i.e. like a coworker or a situation where you just have to be, you have to put up with a difficult human being. I'm saying all this just to say, I'm on a journey of the figuring it out. The best example I was talking about, like absorbing other people's energy, I was I can't play this clip because something tells me for legal reasons I'm not allowed to, but it's a clip of, it's in the show notes, you can watch it for yourself. For those of you who've watched Seinfeld, episode, The Old Man, season four, and the title is Old Man, Google it. And, but my, the clip that's in the show notes is to the interaction with George Costanza and the old man, and who's like a positive human being, and he's saying shit like, yo, yeah, man, I live day by day trying to interact, and George is being like, what the fuck? Nigga, you about to die, man. I think about death on a regular basis, but I love how the interaction ends with the old man saying, dude, man, life is too short for me to have to deal with motherfuckers like you. I love that he acknowledged, he realized that, yeah, you're like a vampire, and you're trying to drain my energy, and I got options. Yeah, you know what? No, I'm realizing the reason I bring up the George Costanza clip is because the friend I was talking to, he couldn't understand allowing another human being to drain your energy. And but that example is like, reminded me, yeah, no, there are some people out there, their sole purpose is just, yo, whose energy can I suck? I don't know. Anyways, but I'm still on fuck people, you know what I mean? I mean, not in the porn flick way, but fuck people, yeah. Next clip. All right. I'm going to talk, in the last episode, I expressed my thoughts about, I used the word pro-Palestine supporters. Now, this ain't no so pro-Israel shit. I'm still on fuck Israel's and their genocide. No, I'm still on that tip. But I am saying, if you motherfuckers, if a North American pro-Israel team, if you haven't realized, we fucking took an L during the election. If you don't see it that way, then I guess we just need to disagree. But in order to introduce, I'm actually going to revise something I said in the last episode. But before I do that, I need to, you know, no, I'm just going to get into it. And because I was going to, my intention was to play a clip by Sarah Jama. She's a politician. And she put a finger down. Essentially, long story short, poor woman. Or I mean, powerful woman. She expressed her views on, hey, she simply that said was, what's going on in Palestine is fucked up. And she's a politician, and her party kicked her out for that shit. The NDP, ain't that a bitch? They kicked her out of the party because it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. The motherfuckers who pay our bills don't like that shit. Whatever, whatever, man. They just, but it's more my point of, I'm trying to restate the fact that, okay, I'm trying to restate the fact, like, you know, my pro-Palestine stance, but while also acknowledging, I'm regarding what I said on the last episode, it doesn't change the fact that I'm pro-Palestine. And this next part I'm about to say is probably some dream in the sky shit, like, because I'm a dreamer, right? And it's probably not realistic, but I am trying to say that team pro-Palestine, a lot of us have our anchor. I'm trying to say, let us remember we want the same thing. On the last episode, I was complaining about the people who were like on that, who were still, even the election's over, and they are still have takes on the internet about how Joe Biden and Kamala Harris fucked up. Like, it bothered me. I'm like, wait, the election's fucking over, and y'all still talking shit about the Dems? I'm like, and I was just talking about, yo, I swear, your side is just keeping me, it's just depressing me over the situation. Anyway, all I'm trying to say is, I have a dream, like Martin Luther King here. Or imagine, like John Legend, imagine a world where we're on the same side, but we have different views about the solution to the problem. Imagine a world where we disagree, but we stay in our lane and respect each other's lanes. I think that's really what bothered me. I think it's more the attack on, oh, you motherfuckers who believe in this politics game are stupid. And honestly, it's just our path. It's like, I'm on the side of the folks. I'm on the team. I'm choosing to believe. This is the thought that really happened. I'm choosing to believe to work within the system to make this shit work by voting. I'm choosing to believe that my side, even though are not showing it or not moving as fast as the other sides want them to move, I still believe that, no, they're respecting the process. It's a fucking process. And I'm saying this while also that we still need the other side to keep their foot on the neck of these Democrats, to be constantly like, yo, that shit ain't cool. We are not down with you. We will not throw up the vote. Yeah. We still need the other side to be a reminder that what you're doing is not cool. But I'm still respecting the fact that, yeah, we're going to butt heads on this shit. But I'm still on the side of, nah, I have faith in these politicians. You have faith in politicians? Nah, I mean, yes, yeah, yeah. Not in all things, but I do trust there are people with good intention who get into politics and trying to change shit. But unfortunately, they can't go in guns blasting. No, they have to navigate the game. It's like they're playing the game and doing the best that they can. I'm still trusting that. Because if we ain't got that, then fuck it, we're hopeless. Anyway, whatever. All right. Yeah, bottom line. Is it possible for us to disagree? Look, I'm not talking about Trump supporters here. Fuck that. I'm saying, yo, we both want the same thing. Is it a possible way? We both want the same thing, but are choosing to go different direct. Look, I'm thinking Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. In the end, the two wanted the same thing, but they hated each other's approach. Is it possible to still... What's the word I'm looking for? Synergize. There we go. But anyway, I'm a dreamer. I'm going to leave it as a dreamer. All right. Okay. What's that? 1, 2. Is that it? Okay. Talked about ginger tea. All right. Okay. Looking at the time. Okay, cool. Not bad. All right. So I have a shitload of links. So yes, the infamous halftime show. Now, I did record. Okay. Confession. All right. So, yes, I recorded the last episode after watching the halftime show, and I very likely didn't reveal that. Well, let me start by saying that I enjoyed the halftime show the exact same way I've always enjoyed rap music, rap as an art. Sometimes it gets me on the first hit. I've developed this habit of, take your time to absorb. I listen to rap music like I listen to an artist or a writer expressing a thought, expressing an idea. So what I do is sometimes the message gets me in the first hit, and sometimes I need time to absorb it. I need time to process it. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that this habit came from the fact that English is my second language. Okay, I know some of you, you don't sound like it, but that's not necessarily a compliment. Wow, you sound good for a blackie. Anyways, you speak good English for a nigger. Anyways, for a dark skin, boom, 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 boom. Anyway, for a guy who looks like he's from boom, 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 boom. Anyway, whatever. that's fucking, did I mention it's a comedy podcast? All right. Oh, yes. When I first discovered rap, it's not just the English sometimes that would escape me. Because, I was into conscious hip hop. Some of these things would like to use big syllable words. I'm looking at you, Keith Murray. Is it Keith Murray? I need to say Keith Sweat. Keith Murray, yeah. It was not just English. Sometimes they would use slang that I was not familiar with. It was very common for me to listen to a rap song, enjoy the beat, and have no fucking clue what this dude is talking about. And I was young. There's been time. Yo, I started out not liking Jay-Z. I didn't get his flow. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, like, what happened to simple rhymes? Like, I'm the king of rock. There ain't none higher. Sucker MC should call me sire. You know what I mean? That rhymes simple. Jay-Z was on that. I know it's not on his first album, but it's on the Black album. But I remember, Far From a Harvard Student, I just had the balls to do it. I'm like, that doesn't rhyme, but I'm like, oh, I see what he's saying. My point is, there's been time where a rap song, it didn't hit me the first time. And this is like, I forgot to mention, yeah, if you refuse to accept that Kendrick Lamar is the last prophet sent to us by Tupac Shakur, peace be upon him, our Lord and Savior Tupac Shakur, if you don't have that kind of belief, this podcast may not be for you.
Can I get an amen?
All right, this is like the this is not just a podcast. This shit is the church / mosque / temple dedicated to the prophet Tupac Shakur. I'm some blasphemy in this shit, right? If you're sensitive about blasphemy, yeah, this podcast ain't for you. All right, did I mention I'm a preacher's son? All right, okay. Where was I? Oh, yeah. There's been Tupac songs. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, there's been Tupac tracks. Actually, that's a lie. No, that's not true. No, wait, hold on. Let me think this through. Because I remember the first time first song by Tupac I heard, actually, it was same song, that verse I'm saying song. But the actual Pac track, it was... they got me trapped in this prison of seclusion. Happiness living on the street is a delusion. Even a smooth criminal would they was get caught. Shut up and shut down with the bullet that he bought. Oh, right. Trapped. Okay, yeah, that's a lie. No, Pac songs hit me immediately. There we go. Now I'm making my point. Kendrick Lamar, it took a while before I saw like, oh, shit. He is the one. He is the one prophesied by Tupac Shakur. Okay, Tupac never prophesied about that shit. But I'm saying, if Kendrick is Jesus, Pac was John the Baptist. Okay, that's bad. Because Pac was Jesus. Man, why the fuck am I talking about theology here? All right, okay. But my point is, it took me a while for me to recognize and understand Kendrick's greatness. So much that I got to that I'm in the habit of, if I listen to his rhyme and I don't get it and it doesn't hit me, I'm not bobbing my head, it's because I missed it. It's like, he's like, what's that line by Jay-Z? He's in the category of rappers that you gotta checking out the rapper and the rhymes that he said. Kendrick makes the kind of lyric that if you didn't get it, it's because you missed something. So you need to go back and do your research. Don't be the idiot on the internet going like, man, fuck this song. Because later you'll be back like, oh, I missed that. I missed that point. Like, whatever. And here's the thing. I appreciate that about him. X-Clan was the same thing. Pac, what I like about him is he had songs that if you re-listen to it, that you would get into it. X-Clan, oh, fuck. What I loved about X-Clan is, sure, the music hit me at the beginning, but I loved how I would have an intelligent homie going, yo, dog, you know what he's talking about? Egyptology. This is fucking the history. He's talking about the Mormons. I remember I had read this book. This is before the internet, kids. I remember reading, I forget the name of the author, but it was a book about Black history, and especially when he got into Egypt, I'm like, what the fuck? Yo, X-Clan talked about that shit. X-Clan had lyrics that were deep. How deep? Deeper than the seafloor. Deeper than the Deeper than the sea floor, traveled by the oh my god, deeper than the sea floor, traveled by the mantis. That same cousin I was talking about, I was like, what the fuck's a mantis? Mantises, blah blah blah. They made lyrics that it was in your interest to surround yourself with people who were smarter than you. People who actually did shit like,
y'all motherfuckers need to gangbang them books.
You know what I mean? Who gangbang them books. Who read books, who be like, yo, I used to love having these conversations. I guess it's a quality. I'm gonna call it a quality of mine, right? It's like, I listen, process, take the time to process, ask questions, listen to people who had a more enlightened take about it. It's like part of the journey. It's part of the fun. It's like Da Vinci Code. It's part of the enjoyment. If that's not your thing, I recognize that, but that's Kendrick's lane. He's like, yo, there's layers on that shit. Yeah, Jay-Z has rhymes. He's got triple entendre in there. That, like, they have a lot of meaning. Anyways, I say all this to explain the fact that the first time I watched the halftime show, it was less to process the show. It was more to be like, I hope he doesn't show up with a dead body of Drake. It's like, I should mention before recording this episode, I listened to the episode of the Black Guy Tips. Oh my god, the Black Guy Who Tips, and it's titled. It's in my notes. It's titled 330. Oh my god, there are 3,000. I don't know, didn't pay attention. 3,049 Kendrick Lamar Super Bowl appreciation episode. And I forget who said that. I think it was Bossy who said how she watched it the same way. It's like sending a child for school. It's like I watched it like Kendrick was a homie, and I hope everything goes all right. I hope Trump doesn't fuck it up. I hope everything goes all, no incident. And after watching it with no incident, I'm like, oh. I realized that a lot of shit went over my head. But I enjoyed the next day. And, well, okay, you know, like Pac said, everyone had to open their mouth with a motherfucking opinion. There were some shitty takes. And it was some great takes. I'm going to say, I think the shittiest take, I'm going to say my favorite one. The shittiest takes are the ones where it made me angry. I skipped it. And I couldn't let go. I'm fighting the temptation to say, no, you got to reply to comments and say, fuck you, bitch. As a staff, record label, as a motherfucking crew. I'll be in the comment section. Yeah, that's why I fucked your bitch. And anyway, yeah, nah, I'm like, you know, this is the internet. You gotta be more articulate than that. What I'm saying is, I nearly in my show notes, I have. I'm gonna play it actually. Not the bad take. What I am gonna play is the I'm gonna call it the worst take. The one that I couldn't let go, but then once I heard a following take. This take that I'm about to play, the world was much better. Essentially, the content creator, her name is, the BLK Daria, or at the BLK Daria on TikTok, and this is what she had to say, right? So, the take that I'm playing is what stopped me from saying, you know what, I don't have to say anything, because this person said it way better than I could have said it myself. And besides, I think the other person was just trolling. But here we go. Here we go. I got a lot of length, guys. Gang.
A woman came on this app and said that if you have good politics, you would not be impressed by Kendrick Lamar's performance. She said a real revolutionary like Nina Simone will be rolling over in her grave. Mm. Guilty, Your Honor. Lock me up. Put me in the same cell as Angela Davis was in when Nina Simone went to go visit her in 1971 and expressed concern. She said, I don't know enough about social justice. All these books you got in this cell right now, overwhelming. I feel intimidated. And Angela Davis told her, what are you talking about? Your songs could do more to persuade people to struggle than any book in this cell. That was after she wrote Mississippi Goddamn. That was after she wrote Four Women. Nina Simone still had no idea the impact her music was having on people. And I thought Nina Simone was a black-ass woman writing black-ass music for black-ass people. The same woman that made the video that I'm talking about, she said that no song in Kendrick Lamar's discography will be as good as Hinds Hall by Macklemore. A black-ass man making black-ass music for black-ass people about black-ass struggle isn't as good as that one song by that white man about Palestine. Wicked work. Don't piss me off!
I'm going to pause this part, right? Just because you said, exactly. That's the part, out of everything that pissed me off, is this lady had the audacity to say that, yo, Macklemore is more real than Kendrick Lamar. Macklemore's Free Palestine track is more real than whatever the fuck Kendrick has ever put out there. Yeah, you heard that, right? And to her, I say,
shut your mouth, Kane, bitch!
All right. Yeah, that's usually reserved for white women, so you know what? You know, whatever. But like she said, okay, I'm going to go back. Let me pull it back a bit. But I love how she says, don't piss me off, because, I mean, yeah, this lady pissed me off already. But here we go. All right, let's continue.
Don't piss me off! 126 million people tuned in to watch this little 5-foot-something man from Compton in flared jeans for 15 minutes. 2 days later, people are still dissecting what he said.
Still.
The lighting, the choreography, the jewelry he was wearing. You gonna tell me that's not revolutionary?
Mm.
Okay, cupcake. When we say pro-Palestine leftists have a tendency to be anti-black, this is what the fuck we're talking about. You have black people, Beyonce, Kendrick, whatever, excelling. They're at the top of their field, goddammit. And you can't even allow for an inch of joy. You take any opportunity to be morally superior, even if it's at the expense of your own goddamn people. Ain't it chilly up there? You don't get tired. I ask this all the time, but don't you get tired? Goddamn.
Yeah, man. I'm tired of these morally superior, feckless human beings. Let me make sure I'm using feckless in the right way. Feckless. Shout out to my homegirl. I'm not going to say her name, but she knows who she is for introducing that word to me. Feckless. Lacking initiative or strength or character. Oh, I was looking for useless. It's for those of you who've seen Billions, there's a scene that I love where he talks about where this dude in power, I'm not going to say the whole scene, but the dude who's got juice, who's got fucking, who's like influence, who's like director, executive, whatever the fuck, man. But he can, he's got the kind of influence that one signature and a neighborhood disappears. Whatever. He's got that kind of juice. And he's and this scholar asshole is talking shit, is dissing him. And he says, you know what? That's why you're just going to be the motherfucking scholar with all these beautiful theories but can't do shit. Who's going to spend his life wishing they were in my seat? And anyway, it bothers me, and you know what, and I'm old enough to have seen this conversation over and over again. On one end, you got the, I want to use the word hippie, but I'm going to say this. On one end, you got the fucking scholar with all these great ideas, great intentions, and about, yes! If we all hang together, you know, all these impractical ideas, you know, these great ideas, great intentions for the world, but they're broke. They can't do shit. They're like, they're broke. And then it's not just the fact that they're broke, but they got no juice. They got no fucking influence. They can't. Yeah, I want to get to the university, but I need bus fare. I can, you know what I mean? It's like Stickman had a song about that. It's like on that revolutionary thing, but you got no fucking, you're useless. You can't help us. All you got is great speeches. That's all you can do. Even at that, I mean, fuck them, whatever. But on the other end, you got the, is it the word? No, I don't want to say black capitalist, but you got the billionaire black person. One phone call could get president whoever the fuck on the phone. But they got shitty intention. They're useless to the community. It's like, where's that middle ground? Where's that middle ground? All I'm saying is, I'm not the kind of person who, I disagree with telling an artist, who's made it to the zenith, and about, like, if I had your talent, this is what I would be doing. It's like, shut the fuck up. Be where I'm at, and then start telling me about what I should be doing. I guess I'm trying to say that, yo, Kendrick performing at the Super Bowl was not an easy task. And I don't feel right in a position to be like, well, Kendrick, you know what you should do? You should talk about ginger and lemon tea. There we go. People need to hear about that shit. The goodness of ginger and lemon tea. How come you ain't got a rap song about ginger and lemon tea? You know what I mean? It's, yeah, anyways. I hate those kind of people. All right, so let me just establish on some of my favorite takes online. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go with a French one. Même les Français, even French people are talking about it, right? I'm not going to play this whole clip, but this this black animatrice, comment ça, animatrice en anglais, radio host. They don't show her name, but she works for a radio station called Rhythm 105.7. I imagine it's in Montreal because that's what the label said on the TikTok video. And I'm just going to play, I'll translate it for you Anglophones, but I'm just going to play the beginning of the clip of what she said, all right, of her take on the halftime show.
Là où moi, j'ai eu de la peine hier, puis j'ai eu de la frustration, c'est qu'il y a un animateur qui a écrit pendant le spectacle à mi-temps, j'écoutais le football tranquille, puis tout d'un coup, des gangs de rue ont pris le contrôle de ma télé.
Okay, I'll translate it because it's this is the first 16 seconds. Okay, and what she said is, she was watching the halftime show, some host or whatever, an animator. Kidding. I wrote in the comment section of wherever she was watching, said, I was enjoying the show until these gangbangers took over my TV. By the way, I should explain that racism in French, it's just as fucked up. I want to say it's even more fucked up than racism than the English, but no, it's more, you know what it is? It's more that I'm more familiar with the racism from the English. When you live in Canada, you get racism from both sides. So I'm more familiar. I know what to expect from the English folks. But French, they always catch me left guard. It's always, oh, motherfucker. Oh, wow. I should have kept my hands up. Oh, my God. You got me this time. Anyway, so I'm not surprised that they would say some stupid shit like, yeah, man, fucking gangbangers took over the TV set. And guess what I did? Of course, I got to go in the comment section. And a bunch of assholes like, well, weren't they crip walking? Ain't that a gang dance? Anyway, whatever. I'm mature enough growth. I'm mature enough not to engage with these motherfuckers. But anyway, so if you notice, I laughed at because I was expecting that kind of racism, that kind of ignorance said by some French racist. I'm only bringing this up because this poor woman, she ends up like, you know, she's like distraught by that comment, and she's like at some point she tears up, and part of me was like, man, don't fucking tear up, don't give the motherfuckers the satisfaction. But I'm realizing that, yo, all of us are trying to survive in this racist environment, so we all go about it our own ways, and maybe she's not used to racism, but I'm kind of surprised, you live in fucking Montreal, but whatever, man. But she tears up. And, you know, but I get it. It's like, I've practiced bracing for the impact, and this poor soul is, anyway, it made her cry, because to her, it was like, yo, I'm explaining to her this to my son, and the idea that these assholes are like, hey, can't tell black people apart, and for the, you know, and explains these same cops who are like, it reminds me of the idea of, I have a lot of friends raising kids, and a lot of their kids are turning into teenagers, grown-ass teenagers, young adults, and I'm going through Facebook looking at pictures of their kids, and I'm like, oh, wow, man, all y'all fit a description. Every single one of you will not be seen as someone's daughter, someone's, my friend's son. Civil one of you is like, yeah, you fit a description. Yeah, yeah. Hands over your head. Some cop from buttfuck nowhere, Ontario. I was going to say Alberta, but you know what? Buttfuck nowhere, Quebec. Is going to work in, is going to patrol, is going to see you, and they're going to like, ah, yeah, you look like a threat to the summer in Venice. All right, whatever. But yeah, anyways. I feel for her. There's a part where she said, oh, man, it's like she's got an innocent soul. At the end, she says, yo, can you guys keep your opinions to yourself? And I wrote in the comment section, I said, that's a lot to ask. Asking a racist to keep their opinions to themselves, you might have a better chance asking them to not breathe, which is what I would like. She'd love to be able to do. Ask them to not breathe. I wish I had the Jedi mind trick. And I said, yo, stop breathing. Choke on your racism. All right, okay. So I'm going through all the... In the show notes, there's going to be a whole lot of links about related to the halftime show, takes on the halftime show. One of my favorite is... Okay. The one I will play is before I move to the featured thought. The cultural significance of Sarah Williams Crip Walking. Shout out to her. But this is my favorite thought. So during the halftime show, and I missed it, like I said, it went over my head. Apparently, there was one of the dancers. It's one of the dancers as opposed to someone who from the audience who just showed up, right? One of the dancers pulled up a Palestine flag and had Palestine and Sudan, and his intention was to bring awareness to the situation at the Super Bowl. And apparently, from what I understand, homeboy was tackled afterwards. And here's Al Jazeera, they interviewed him, and I was interested in his take on why he did what he did. And he goes, let me play. He goes, the performer who staged a protest with a flag of Palestine, Sudan, told Al Jazeera why he felt he had to. Okay, here we go.
I felt I didn't have a choice because I was selected to be a part of the halftime show, and when I saw what my position was, you know, it was a great stage, a large stage. And we know as a practicing Muslim, our Prophet Muhammad teaches us, if you see a wrongdoing or you're aware of a wrongdoing, you must stop it with your hands. And if you can't stop it with your hands, stop it with your tongue, speak out against it. And if you can't stop it with your tongue, try to stop it with your heart, meaning pray about it. So I had an opportunity on a grand scale to bring awareness or speak out against a wrong of our Muslim brothers and sisters. So we're spiritually connected in Islam, and we're human. We're connected with empathy for humanity because we're all human beings, God's creation, and they're oppressed. And it's on a wide scale, and nobody is really giving it the light that it should get, or at least working toward a change. And I wanted to show the solidarity to those afflicted by this and their families and loved ones, that they're being remembered here in America. And they're being remembered here in America, not just by me, but by others.
Powerful. Powerful. What's that brother's name? Super Bowl halftime performer. Oh, he was a performer who staged a protest with the flags of Palestine, Sudan, told Al Jazeera why he felt he had to. Okay, I'm sad they don't mention his name. I respect it. Like, oh, Michelangelo of hip-hop from Sudan and Palestine. You know what I mean? It bothers me. We live in a world where giving a fuck can get you in trouble, but it is what it is. I say it is what it is only because I can't think of a better thing to say aside from the fact that it bothers me, but good for him. All right, okay, I guess that's it, man. By the way, in the other link section, there's, before I get to feature thought, the final thought, I feel like this is the part of the show where everyone walks out. It's like, man, I ain't trying to hear that shit. And I'm going to try to keep it short because I'm hungry. One of my links, are they all comedians? Oh, okay, Super Bowl halftime dancer won't face charges. I haven't read the article yet. Well, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to put it in the links. Let's see if his name is in there. Da-da-da-da. Bye. No. You know what? The links is in the show notes. You can read it for yourself. New Orleans. The cast member who displayed the Palestine flag with the word Gaza in protest during Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl LIX. L is 50, right? Fuck, I look like Roman. Halftime show will not face charges. New Orleans police. Whatever. Links in the show notes. You can check it out yourself. Okay. Where we at? Okay, this concludes. No, we're going to conclude the show. All right, this is it. We're going to take a quick break and then get to our feature thought, okay? And we are back. Let me try something. I hope that didn't blow up your ears like it blew up mine. All right, okay. I am back. I'm going to have a poll. Should I refer to myself in the third person? I have a friend, she disagrees with this notion. Because, it's me and the podcast. Podcast is like a corporation. Anyways, yeah. I'm going to have a poll. Should I refer to myself in the third person? Or me and the podcast in the third person? Or just me? Wait a minute. What the fuck am I asking you? It's my goddamn podcast. All right, okay. All right, mes amis. Reminder. So I read the book, Ça ne marchera jamais, a book by Mark Randolph that was initially written in English, and this is like the French edition. And it's not that. Okay, first let me explain where the title comes from. I'm at the last chapter, covered the last chapter, and the next part is the epilogue. And I figured that let's just jump into it right now. But the last word he says, spoiler alert, en français, is it's beautiful. It's a beautiful story. It's the last chapter ends on after Netflix becomes an IPO, how that went well. Oh man, the way he drew a beautiful story is that he took his son, they flew on a private jet, him and his son, and he talks about his father. He has memory of his dad. And how he wishes his dad was. I mean, he's not upset that his dad wasn't there to see him make it, but he's proud of the fact that his dad saw him plant the seed, and his dad, like, he knew his dad was always proud of him, and he basically he's proud of the fact that his dad got to see that his son was on a path to success. He saw the right elements. And the last words, and he's just talking about how he's in New York, coming out of a cab. He's going to hang out in New York with his son. And I love how the last line before the epilogue chapter was, Viens, on est arrivé, which translates to, come on, we're here. Or let's go, we're here. Fuck, I look like a translator. Anyways, by the way, there's a big chance this podcast might go full French. I'm a Franco-Ontarian. No, I should explain. I was surrounded by Franco-Ontarians. I was raised by Haitians, but surrounded by Franco-Ontarians. So it's only natural for us as a Franco-Ontarian to like always talk to you in English. And then when they get comfortable, they start dropping the French. And at some point, they're full French. That's what my teachers wanted for me, man. To say, fuck les Anglais, Steve. Fuck the English and stick to your French roots. Even though they would call me a nigger and whatever. Okay. Yes. Viens, on est arrivé is the last line before we jump into the prologue. So remember that story I was explaining how he was with his son, he's successful, all that hard work paid off and now he's an IPO. It's like, that's how, if this was a movie, that's how the movie ends. Him becoming an IPO and then going like, yeah, let's go, son. And I won't lie, man. I fucking hated the success story. It was supposed to be inspirational, but I fought nothing but hatred. Not for Mark Rudolph. I felt hatred for the fucking translator. The book was translated in French and the dude who was reading it, and I found myself, because I kept rushing the story. It was a great story, but I kept binging it and it got tiring and it got to a point where I was like, fuck, am I reading this shit in French? I feel the need. I think I'm going to buy the English version and re-go for it. And the reason, because just for authenticity, I have a friend, homegirl, she refuses to watch Korean movies translate it. No, she prefers to watch it with the Korean language with subtitles because it's just more authentic. And at first I was like, that's dumb. Of course, I didn't say that to her face, but I was like, man, that's dumb. Let's fucking stick to the translation. But now I get it for authenticity. But the reason I don't regret my choice. The reason I chose to go with the French version, for those who haven't heard the previous episode where I talked about it, is because I'm trying to get in the habit of absorbing, taking in French literature. Because every once in a while, again, Frank Winterin, you forget that. Oh, that's right. They speak French. That's right. Why the fuck did I turn on the French subtitles on? My first language is French. It happened. Hey, whatever. It's a cultural phenomenon which some of you will not understand. Anyways, but all this to say that I'm glad I started in French, but now I'm like, yeah, let me get the authentic. Like, I'm really trying to get in the habit of listening to consume French content. Goddamn English, they fucked us up, man. All right. Oh, right. Okay. I forget what I talked about in the last episode, but I'm going to try to remember the two things that hit me. I don't know if I want to say the hardest, but that got me emotional is there's a part of the book where he talks about how these motherfuckers got successful, but they get to a point where they have to do some layoffs. And, yo, I couldn't help. And the thing is, it's interesting hearing him talk about layoff. He was being a human. He's not being an asshole about it. It's like, yeah, man, fuck them families. We trying to make our shareholders happy. But, like, you know, it was the humane angle of layoffs. Is essentially, they establish in the book, it's like, yo, in order for us to get to this next level, before we go IPO, in order for us to get to the next level, we're going to have to trim some fat. We're going to have to get rid of we're going to have to get rid of our day ones. It's kind of a little heartbreaking. You know, some of them had deserved it, but it was tough. It was hard for me to not go through that chapter and not feel like the person being told, yo, sorry, B, we got to lay you off so we can make more money and whatever. Yeah, but it was a hard chapter for me to process. It was a necessary evil, but it is what it is. You know what's wild is I remember when I was laid off once and I found myself feeling sorry for my manager explaining to me, like, you know, I'm pissed or whatever, man. Well, I mean, sorry for my manager who had to make the, because I knew it wasn't easy. I could tell that she's a human being. It's like they had to make a choice. And I was like, sorry, it's a longer story. It's another story. It's actually a funny story on why I got laid off, but whatever. But I knew when they were going through the list, someone had to go. You know what's funny? It was when we knew layoffs was going to happen. All these people were like, all of a sudden, they're putting pictures of their kids on their desk. And I didn't pick up on it. I got one dude, this brown dude, motherfucker. All of a sudden, this nigga's patriotic. He's got an American flag. I'm one of you. If he could have wore a MAGA hat or whatever. If it was a MAGA shop, he would have wore a MAGA hat, man. Fuck these immigrants, whatever. Anyways, I didn't catch on. I guess I was a little indifferent. I'm like, whatever. When I was laid off, it was a company in the States, so all it meant that is I had to go back to Canada, which I was willing to do because I was getting homesick, and also it's not like I was going back to an undeveloped country here. I'm going to a country with pogey. Anyway, shout out to you Canadians who understand what pogey is. And my point is, getting laid off, it sucks, but one thing is you realize that, oh, these corporations don't give a fuck. Oh man, they fucked me, but there was no love in this interaction. Yeah, you end up realizing that, okay, yeah, no, these corporations, okay, have no obligation to keep me. It was just, they just wanted me for my body. Oh my God, okay, let's get back. So reading that chapter about being laid off was, I'm not saying it was difficult, but there was points where I got emotional. There was points where I'm like, I hated him for trying to get me to feel bad for the fact that I had to lay off some people. But at the same time, I was like, I get it. It's like I was struggling between I get it and to fuck you, man. poor motherfucker's got to go back and live with his mom. That's not funny, but whatever. Here's hoping they got a good severance package. But it sounds like the people they laid off are talented motherfuckers. They're talented people who are like, fuck it. X job, next job. Another chapter that really moved me is, so Mark Rudolph, there's a part where he talks about how, so he's a co-founder and his homie, I think it was his homie, whatever. They got to a point where he's like, yo, dude, I know you're a co-founder, but I kind of need you to accept a demotion in order for us to, I guess it's the sacrifices this D had to do to make Netflix what it is today. And I thought it was powerful how they got to a point where, so his sidekick, his co-founder, co-owner, pretty much had told him like, yo, dude, in order for us to look good to these investors, they need to see me as being in charge. So I kind of need you to take a demotion, and it's. It was a powerful story. The way his friends explained it to him, it's like true nerd fashion. Like I could picture myself being in that situation. You could tell it was difficult for his friend to explain it to him. So he actually had a PowerPoint presentation ready, and he can sense that. Oh, this motherfucker's using the sandwich technique on me. You're a great employee, but this is where you need to work out. You know, he could see. His friend using the same tactics he learned on how to give feedback or negative feedback to someone. Anyway, so his homie, again, I read it in French, so I may have fucked up on the translation, but I'm going to use with his homie, his co-founder, his partner, is trying to explain to him how, yo, you're good at your job, but in order for us to get to the next level, these investors need to see that I'm in charge because I'm the one with all the skill. You know what? It was equivalent of that scene in not The Sopranos, in The Godfather, where he's telling what's his name? He goes, yo, you're not a wartime consigliere, man. We need a wartime, so these investors need to see that a wartime consigliere is running this shit. And what I found powerful is like how, yo, fuck, homie had to swallow his pride. But the way he described the scene is I could see myself being like, fuck y'all. He put enough details for me to realize it was a tough decision, but in the end, he swallowed his pride, and he killed his ego, and he said, fuck it, all right, let's go. You're running things, and he goes, oh, by the way, I need you to give me more stock options. Well, what the fuck? Anyway, yeah. But I think what I like is, okay, the third thing is he dropped some gems about if you want to be an entrepreneur, it was more like this is the shit I had to do as an entrepreneur. But I think my favorite part is how he establishes it's like, yo, when we started Netflix, money wasn't on our mind. What was on my mind was solving problems, how all my talents were being used to make shit happen. It's surrounding myself with good, talented folks. Getting us from point A to point B. And it's amazing how when he gets to the part of, fuck, it's like the getting rich was like a cherry on the cake. It wasn't the intention, but it was. They didn't set out with a drug dealer's destiny is reaching a key. He just loved selling drugs. He loved interacting with the crackhead. I don't know. There was something about the way he explained it. You can tell that he enjoyed that's what I'm trying to say. He enjoyed the journey. It wasn't about the destination. It was all about the journey. Man, look, there was a lot of gems in there, but there was a lot of bars in this book, which is why I'm tempted to reread it again. And God forbid that, you know what's fucked up is how, like on one end, I'm proud of my, I'm glad that I have a Netflix account. And then these motherfuckers send me an email. It's like, hey, price of the brick's going up. Apparently my cost is going to go up again. And you know what? No, I'm kind of glad because they got shows in there that I'm actually enjoying, that I'm finally binge watching. again. So, all right, man. Well, power to you, Netflix. God forbid that Netflix is like, oh, by the way, we're pro-Israelites. We're pro-Israeli. We're pro-Trump. And, yeah, go fuck yourself, nigga. Yeah, please don't be a bad guy. Look at me. It's been a while since I'm not saying brand loyalty, but it's been a while since it's been a company not owned by black folks that I'm, like, rooting for. Yeah, I was with Netflix because I used to live in the States. I subscribed with Netflix when they were sending CDs. So it was great hearing that part of the history. Anyways, woo, I just remember I'm hungry. All right, okay. With that said, this concludes today's episode. I don't know if I mentioned in the other links, one of my favorite links that I'm sharing is two of them are comedy related. And one of them is White Lady Explains Racism. Fuck, I hate when my spell checker takes it upon himself. No, you meant to say, it reminds me of my parents. I said, explains racism. White Lady Expressed Racism, .. to a black stand-up comedian. Yeah, so essentially, black comedian makes a joke, a black-ass joke, and in true white people fashion, this white lady comes in, oh, that wasn't race, and whatever. It's just funny, And the way the black dude reacted, it was like the equivalent of,
shut your mouth, Kane, bitch!
Yeah, but, you know what? Just watch it for yourself. You know what I mean? Like, he handled it better than I would, because I would have, like, bitch! I would say the kind of shit that would have gotten me, like, arrested for scaring a white woman and white people. All right, okay. This concludes today's episode. I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed recording it. Website address is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast401@gmail.com. Before this end of the show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thought. And it's protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue.
Who's that blue?
Motherfucker. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and black folks who say, yes, the big rubes question, are you an outcast? You know, I might change that to, I represent for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and black folks who are an outcast, who grew up being an outcast to the outcast. Outside, you know, outside of the outside, whatever. You're an outsider, that's the point. This episode, as always, is rated R and F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be that with Whitey, then fuck you too. Again, thank you for listening, and remember, please, be kind to your favorite podcast. Alright, peace.